It's often said that Abraham Lincoln's election in 1860 provoked the Civil War. And while it's true the election prompted South Carolina to leave the Union, Civil War wasn't a certainty until mid-April. During that time, Southern states debated over whether or not to secede, and it was Virginia that had the most influential and unpredictable debate. Bill Freeling is the senior fellow at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. His new book, with Craig Simpson, is Showdown in Virginia, the 1861 Convention and the Fate of the Union. In the book, Bill Freeling presents highlights from Virginia's bitter battle over whether to secede. Bill, you've written four books on the Civil War, but this one is different. Showdown in Virginia, the 1861 Convention and the Fate of the Union. This is the highly edited transcript of 2 months of Virginia's debate over whether to break away from the Union. I know that it is a labor of love for you. Why is it?
First of all, I wrote my very first book review about the four-volume, 3,000-page edition of this complete debate back in 1965. And I claim that this is the most important document we have on secession, and I lamented that it was so long that very few people except me would read it. And right at that time, I vowed that I would do my own shorter version of it at some point. So this is an old dream of mine. The thing that blew me away was how very close this debate was, how the arguments of the Unionists were every bit as good as the secessionists, and so we had a real contest here, which on the face of it, anybody could win. This was not what I long had been taught in school, that Lincoln was elected and therefore the secessionists swept through the South.
At one point, Virginia actually said, no, we won't secede.
That's right. 2 weeks before Virginia did secede, the convention voted by a 2-to-1 majority not to secede.
Abraham Lincoln was elected in November of 1860, and then 1 month later, South Carolina votes to secede from the Union. Why did Lincoln's election precipitate South Carolina pulling out of the Union?
South Carolina is a very peculiar state. They were a very aristocratic country who felt very uncomfortable in such a democratic world. They did not believe that the majority should rule. They believed the property should rule. Their problem was that they were an extreme state and nobody else was that extreme. Typical problem of an extremist. What are you going to do with the moderates around you?
Was Virginia as moderate as South Carolina was extreme?
Yes. There is a little portion of Virginia along the Atlantic Ocean where there are a lot of very powerful slaveholders who also have their doubts about so-called mobocracy. But they are a very small percentage of the Virginians.
Now, what was it about Lincoln? What do they know about this new president that made them secede so soon after his election?
Excellent question. It was not clear that Lincoln was dangerous. And it was particularly not clear that Lincoln was dangerous when he announces in his inaugural address that he favors a constitutional amendment which will forever bar Congress from abolishing slavery. This is called the 13th Amendment. It's the exact opposite of the 13th Amendment that's passed in April of 1865. And it says that Congress shall never abolish slavery, and it is declared that this amendment is unamendable.
So what is the background of who is seceding and when?
South Carolina secedes, as you say, within almost a month of Lincoln's election. And then the question becomes, will other Deep South states secede? Six of them do secede by February 1st. And the question is, what will the rest of the South that is still in the Union ultimately do? And as of February 1st, 1861, the determination of these other Southerners is to stay right where they are. Abraham Lincoln decides to send ships to reinforce Fort Sumter in South Carolina, and war starts. And the starting of war immediately changes everything. Because the minute the war starts, the question is no longer, what do you think is best to stay in the Union or not? The question is, who are you going to shoot at? Who are you going to kill? And Virginia has to decide, do you want to kill Northerners or do you want to kill Southerners? And Marylanders have to decide, do you want to kill Northerners or do you want to kill Southerners?
So the debate in Virginia was civil and short, or what?
No, it's uncivil and long.
Most Virginians, as you're saying, are thinking, we don't want to be part of the war. We're not that radical. Let's keep things the way they are.
As they put it, let's wait and see. let's see if Lincoln becomes dangerous. If he becomes dangerous, we'll secede. It doesn't look to us like he's going to become dangerous.
There's so much to excerpt from your book, but I'd like you to read a passage by the Unionist in Virginia, John Baldwin.
John Baldwin is desperate to avoid being seen as a secessionist, but he's also desperate to be seen as no anti-slavery man. And so he says, and this is very, I'm quoting here, "Sir, in regard to the question of slavery, I have always entertained the opinion that African slavery is a good thing, on every ground, moral, social, religious, a blessing to the master and the slave, a blessing to the non-slaveholder and the slaveholder." This is a unionist talking. People think that the contest in Virginia is between unionists who don't like slavery and secessionists who do. No way. Unionists also are slaveholders. As they see it, they are jeopardizing slavery more by seceding than by staying in the Union. And of course they're right. Secession will cause a civil war, and civil war will be the fastest way to abolish slavery. So you can see why a very conservative, careful slaveholder would think he's plunging into a very dangerous abyss by risking a civil war with the Yankees.
So you were saying, though, that after Virginia voted 2-1 against secession in early April, this is later reversed because violence breaks out at Fort Sumter. This changes the strategy of the Virginians who want to stay in the Union.
They decided to ask the people of Virginia in the referendum that was going to occur about secession. You can either secede or you can call a border conference. And by border conference, they meant a conference of all the 8 slave states still in the Union. Their hope was that the people of Virginia would vote for that border conference, and that border conference would figure out some way to keep this fight that had started in Charleston to a skirmish that could be replaced by some kind of new peaceful negotiations.
Why do the unionists care so much about not getting into this bigger conflict?
They just think it's a disaster. They think it's a disaster for America. They think it's a disaster for Virginia. They're very aware that most of the battles are going to be fought in Virginia on their own soil. And they think it's an absolute disaster for slavery because they think that slavery is doomed ultimately in a civil war. So they're bound and determined to figure out some way to get this warfare behind them and to get back to the decision of, is secession wise, not the decision of, who do I want to fire my gun at? One of the persons worried about this possible delay is Henry Wise, who had been one of the most important politicians in Virginia, governor of Virginia during John Brown's raid, and a fierce secessionist. Wise does not want any delays. He does not want any change of this momentum towards secession. So instead of allowing things to slow down, he decides to organize an extra-legal attack by Virginians on federal installations at Harper's Ferry and at the Gosport Naval Base before the people ever had a chance to vote. And he's horrified the Unionists. Their point is that Virginia cannot secede until the people vote to secede. Wise's point is, oh no, we've got to act now militarily or we're going to lose this war before it ever starts.
So John Baldwin, the Unionist, finds out what the former governor, Henry Wise, is up to and confronts him and says, what you're doing is illegal. And they argue in a very passionate and dramatic debate. Let's listen to a reenactment of the debate where you play the role of Baldwin and our colleague Kevin McFadden plays the role of Henry Wise.
This convention is authorized to change the whole constitution of the state.
Not without the sanction of the people.
Is there any man here when the car of war is rushing over people themselves, crushing them under its wheels, when the edge of every bay and estuary in the bay is endangered by invasion, whilst your steamers are seized in New York, whilst your people have risen up and sunk hulks in the channel at Norfolk? Sir, the safety of the people justifies the overriding for at least a time of acts and statutes and even the Constitution itself.
Overriding the Constitution? Not under our system.
Under our system, civil war attacks the safety of all, attacks the very vitals of the state, and destroys the Constitution itself. Now to tell me that this convention is bound before it can do anything to defend the people at this moment, to tell me that we must await the sanction of the people, is to present to me an argument too conservative for any man to recognize in a crisis such as now upon us.
Mr. Wise informs us that the welfare of the people is a sort of higher law known in free government. I deny that. I deny that we have any higher law under our system except the Constitution. It seems to me if there ever was a time to appeal to the great principles of constitutional limitations, it is a time like this.
Are we to stand still and do nothing between now and May? We will take the forts that now threaten our lives and liberties. We will take the arms necessary to defend ourselves. We will take the Navy Yard that holds all the ship timber, the best in the United States. If we do not take it, when we vote to secede, we will have no ships, no muskets, no ordnance, no powder. The amount of the gentleman's argument is that we are to do nothing, that we are to let the powder go, the Navy Yard go, and all the arms at Harper's Ferry go. And all this because of a mere stickling upon a point between Tweedledum and Tweedledee.
But Mr. Wise, by what authority is war upon us? Who has declared war? Who has authorized it? The President of the United States, it is true, has threatened a war against the Confederate States, and a war in which I am perfectly disposed to make a common cause with the Confederate States. But it is not yet a war until our people adopt it. And if we start at the onset without regard to the proper limitations of power, cautious as we may thereafter be, I tell you that we are in danger of emerging from this revolution anything but a free people. In the name of my constituency, in the name of constitutional law, in the name of constitutional liberty, in the name of representative responsibility, I protest against this act.
I have to say, Henry Wise's arguments seem awfully convincing to me. He's saying war is imminent and that direct action's needed to prevent an invasion of Virginia by the federal government. Baldwin, your character, seems to be arguing for adhering to the Constitution. He's so committed to that at a time of seeming violence and crisis.
Well, I think he's got a hold of a very important reason we have constitutions. American republicanism is based on the notion that the people must consent to government. If the people are going to dissent from government, that is to say, secede from the Union, that, Baldwin thinks, is the people's decision to make. Wise is usurping the people's right to withdraw their consent to be governed. It's not that the Constitution is so valuable, it's that principle that popular government is by consent of the people, and that consent of the people must be protected.
I'm curious whether he's hiding behind that argument, which is, I don't want my farm destroyed by war.
Oh, what a good question. And it's so hard to get behind people's motives. My gut instinct is, this is Baldwin's great moment of history. And I feel that at this particular moment, he was just inflamed by a patriotic purpose. And that patriotic purpose was to protect the right of the people to make their own decisions. And I don't think he had any ulterior motives, and certainly didn't do him any good. His career did not blossom as a result of taking this position.
So you called the debate that we just heard between Baldwin and Wise the climactic debate of this 2 months-long Virginia General Assembly session. What happened right after that?
Well, what happens right after that is exactly what Wise hopes is going to happen. There is a skirmish at Harper's Ferry, a skirmish at the Gosport Naval Yard, and that skirmish leads Virginians to say, we are at war. The federal government is trying to kill our boys. Our brave boys are holding the line against the federal tyrant. And that just changes everything. Just the way Wise hoped it would, the question now becomes, which side will Virginia fight upon, and will you back up your Virginia boys who have patriotically protected Virginia soil from the federal government? A very different question.
How much of a leader in this debate was Virginia's decision ultimately to secede?
Oh, it's crucial. The minute Virginia secedes, North Carolina secedes, Tennessee secede, Arkansas secedes. Half of those southern states that were still in the Union are out of the Union on the Confederate side. With that change of power, the Confederates have some chance to win the Civil War. So we're dealing here with a moment when Virginians were terribly important in deciding whether a revolution could succeed.
You've written that that Lincoln didn't handle the secession crisis very well, actually.
Well, let me just deal with one crumb of that policy. And I don't think that Lincoln as a rookie president was anything like the Lincoln as a mature president. I think one of the excitements of American history is the way this man matures and grows into a truly great leader. But like so many rookies, he makes his beginner's mistakes. He says that he's calling up the Virginians and all the other people in the Union to put down the rebellion in South Carolina. And the minute he writes that, he gets all kinds of objections from people who say, you shouldn't put it that way. You should say, you're calling out people to protect Washington, D.C. against a rebel invasion. And Lincoln thinks, oh, my God, that's right. That's what I should have said. And if he'd said that, if he'd said, I'm calling up you Virginians just to protect the White House from a Southern invasion, that would have been very different than saying, I'm calling up you and you Virginians to invade South Carolina and put down this rebellion. And that's rather typical of the kind of fumbling mistakes that Lincoln makes, I think, in the beginning. And that's going to be the subject of my next book.
We're running out of time, but I do want to ask you about that book. I think it's about Lincoln's early life, which you say hasn't really received proper scrutiny, that his moral vision was especially remarkable when viewed from the perspective of where he came from.
That's right. He comes from poverty, and he comes from a political position of desperately trying to keep the slavery issue out of national controversy. And even in the latter days right before the Civil War, he is trying to avoid saying that the federal government is a threat to slavery. And that's what's behind that curious 13th Constitutional Amendment, which he endorses in his first inaugural, forever protecting slavery from congressional law. It's a long way from that Lincoln to the Lincoln of the last 13th Amendment, using the federal government to abolish slavery. And I want to trace that whole process, and also the process by which he got rid of some of the fumbling rookie mistakes that he made with, for example, that proclamation of April 15th.
Well, Bill Freeling, this is fascinating. Thank you for talking with me today on With Good Reason.
Thanks, Sarah.
Bill Freeling is the senior fellow at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. His most recent book is Showdown in Virginia, the 1861 Convention and the Fate of the Union. It's published by the University of Virginia Press, and he co-authored it with Craig Simpson. For discussion questions and a script that allows the climactic Wise-Baldwin debate to be reenacted in the classroom, teachers may want to visit the website showdowninvirginia.com.